Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Connor Orr. We have a Week 10 slate to talk about. But Connor, we're starting with a Monday night game. That is the immortal San Francisco 49ers, undefeated, hosting the Seattle Seahawks. That is a game that did not, it looked like another sort of, underwhelming Monday night football slate. No one really noticed it, and now here we are. It is the best matchup of this week.
Second week in a row with a primetime game worth watching, and hopefully a primetime game that delivers. I think Baltimore and New England gave us the first taste of meaningful primetime football that we've felt all season, and here's another chance to actually have something relevant and non-Dolphins related after 7 o'clock.
It is. It's like it sweeps. Yeah, here we go. we're going to start with the Seahawks offense against the 49ers defense. Seahawks continue to be relatively run heavy, it's run heavy for 2019. Chris Carson has been a big part of this. The thing that I wonder about with this game when I look at this matchup, Kwon Alexander is out for the 49ers. I was not a Kwon Alexander guy coming into this season. I thought it was a bit of an overpay in free agency, but it was not. He was fantastic the first half of the season here. He is out for the year with a torn pectoral. That means it's going to be Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw, the rookie, at linebacker here for the 49ers. And there is a major burden on the linebackers in this Robert Saleh system. He lines up, he takes Nick Bosa and Dee Ford sometimes when Eric Armstead is in there, he just has those ends lining up wide and crashing in, and it's up to the linebackers to clean this stuff up. Mm-hmm. And with all the misdirection and bootleg stuff that the Seahawks do with Russell Wilson, this is a tall order for a couple of young linebackers.
It is a tall order for them. But interestingly enough, I think this is going to be a game that gets Seattle maybe going a little bit more, because we've always thought of them as these traditional sort of rushing stalwarts. But, if you look at some of the sort of the more advanced rushing statistics now, I mean, they're basically at average, right, across the league. I mean, none of their running backs are higher in, net yards per attempt, or, a lot of their offensive linemen aren't really there. And while San Francisco really poses that traditional challenge, I mean, if they can get some of their running backs to the second level, this might change some of our minds, I think, about where Seattle is heading with the run game, and that it's not necessarily just a Russell Wilson deal for them.
I know. It's, all the complexity in this 49ers defense sort of built on the back end and supposed to be simple in the front seven here. It's just, after watching what Russell just did to the Bucs, who, they had to get out of man because their guys were gassed on Sunday and ended up just switching to zone after a whole day of basically chasing DK Metcalf on crossers there. But this is a series of tough matchups because the Seahawks can also build it out so that Richard Sherman is not going to follow Tyler Lockett anywhere. He's going to stay on his side of the defense. Lockett can move around. They can create some plus matchups here for Tyler Lockett against his 49ers secondary.
Yeah, and traditionally, obviously Richard Sherman is a top-tier player, but if you had to pinpoint maybe an overall weakness in that 49ers defense, and we mentioned linebacker, but the further back you get, I think the more problems you're going to be able to potentially cause against them. And credit to Seattle, who's just kind of keeps diversifying the way that they line their guys up. They're adding more receiver talent, as we've seen here in the last few weeks. They're trying to put a bunch of different bodies on the field, Josh Gordon possibly getting involved here. So I think that if nothing else, it's the start of something different, or at least maybe different ways that we're going to see teams attack the 49ers defense.
Yeah, it's going to be a good test here, and certainly this looks to be the biggest challenge the 49ers have had defensively all season. The big question mark until last week, perhaps still lingering a little bit, Jimmy Garoppolo was like the last remaining question with this 49ers team, and could Garoppolo, I don't think there's been a problem with I think he's seeing the field okay. His mechanics are still generally all right. I mean, he processes things so quickly. He moves through his progression so quickly. He was just like one out of every five throws, he was just airmailing for reasons unknown. And I don't know if it had to do someone with the ACL, and he doesn't completely trust it quite yet, and maybe that was throwing things out of whack just a little bit. But, I mean, he was sharp in the Cardinals win, and now he's well-rested. Now he gets a Seahawks defense that really, they don't have much of a pass rush this year.
It's sneaky bad, right? Which is so weird for a Seahawks team to describe them like that, especially a team that traded for Jadeveon Clowney before the season started. But I do agree with you that if you look at the way, and I think if you asked maybe some coaches who are watching him around the league, I think that they would back that up, that I think part of that is the ACL, and that takes more than a calendar year for that to kind of fully come back together and to get everything back to where it was before. But I think it's interesting that Garoppolo for weeks was being asked in San Francisco, are you okay with not being the guy here? Are you okay that this is a run first offense? And of course he is. I mean, that this is also rooted in where he came from, where in New England, if they could ideally win a game without a quarterback, they would do it because it's a smarter way to win. You know, on every given pass play, there's three things that can happen and two of them are bad. And so I think that that's that kind of mindset going forward is like, if I don't need to make any of these huge plays, then I don't have to make any of these huge plays. I have better pieces around me. And that's been their sort of MO all season. And now that they're needing him to make the plays, he is having those 2, 3, 4 touchdown games that we know that he's capable of having.
We had Nick Mullins in both matchups last year between the 49ers and the Seahawks here. I will say, though, the 49ers pulled off the upset in their own building last year as pretty significant underdogs in that game. It was, when I step back, I just kind of wonder, it seems like Russell Wilson wasn't unleashed last year the way he has been this year. And, you know, you look at the two games last year, Seahawks actually had identical 168-yard rushing games against the 49ers both times. The 49ers had a couple giveaways in the matchup in Seattle that sort of sunk them there. But you just kind of wonder if this is a game where almost by design you might see Russell Wilson throwing on, you know, 65% of the Seahawks snaps for once.
I would love that. And I would love to just see him dust Richard Sherman once or twice, too. You know, I think that would feel good for Russell Wilson. That was the onus for, I picked the Seahawks to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of this year, and I doubled down in our staff predictions, which I think are going up this week, which you guys should check out if you haven't. And the whole point of that was like, man, I would just love a season where they just cut Russell Wilson loose, give him some good wide receivers, and let him dunk on Richard Sherman. I bet that would just feel really good. Here's a chance to do it in a huge spot.
Former colleague of ours, Richard Sherman. He doesn't work here anymore, though. So, yeah.
So I can say whatever I want about him.
This is going to be a real good one. One more fairly miscellaneous note. I guess not that miscellaneous. It's pretty impressive. Joe Staley thinks he might play in this one. We might not have clarity until Monday night. The left tackle who broke his leg in week one. And Kyle Juszczyk might be back as well, which would be a nice piece. He's just a fun piece for this offense. It's nice to see the ultra back, the super back, whatever you want to call it, the versatile fullback coming back into vogue, well, at least in like 2 or 3 places in the NFL.
I remember when I was in college, that was like a big Sports Illustrated feature, was the rise of the super back. And it was like basically what you called all these like hybrid tight end white guys that were mostly blocking, but sometimes carried the ball for like for 5 or 10 yards. You know, it's
the Jacob Hollister types.
Yeah, but in some ways, isn't it weird to think that Juszczyk is more exciting to me to see back than Staley, because it expands what they can do on offense, and they can get a little bit more creative up front. They can get a little bit more complicated. I mean, that if you you remember back when they started putting this whole team together, that was one of the first free agents that they signed from Baltimore. And, you know, he was an integral part of what Shanahan wanted to do there. But, yeah, give credit to Staley, too. The visions of a Jack Youngblood here coming back after just a little bit of time after a broken leg. But if you're him, right, if you're that age, and this is the first time in 8 years that the team has been good or relevant again, you gotta just throw some tape on it. Not that I would. I would never come back and play it.
No, but, I would be in the fetal position on my couch watching my teammates and maybe weeping softly as the game went on. It would be. We'll see if either guy gets back. This might all be irrelevant by the time Monday rolls around and the official decisions have been made. But Juszczyk out there against this Seahawks defense that really doesn't load up on defensive backs at any point. I mean, you get two or three linebackers a lot of the time with the Seahawks D. I don't know if it's quite the advantage against the Seahawks as it would be against a team that might want to go a little bit lighter, but either way, just to have the luxury is a nice thing for Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about creating offensive sets where you can do a ton of different things without having to change personnel. And, you know, Juszczyk's ability to catch the ball and his ability to block the block just makes him that ideal sort of fit there. And I think you can pin Seattle in some different things and move the football. But I don't know. I think this is, like you said at the beginning, this is a unique challenge for San Francisco because they haven't faced a lot of really good teams this year. And this is probably the best and biggest challenge that they've had so far.
Certainly the most transcendent quarterback they've faced this year. So that'll be it'll be nice. It'll be fun to watch. Stay up on Monday night for once.
Seriously.
All right, Connor. You got to get going. And I've got the rest of the show to do. But first, we're going to take a quick break. Then I will be back to lightning round the rest of the Week 10 matchups. All right, we're back, and let's go a little lightning round here with the remaining Week 10 matchups. We'll start Sunday night, Vikings-Cowboys, real good one here. Smaller margin of error for Dak Prescott in this game. He looked a little bit, it was a slow start against the Giants last Monday night. He was not sharp early on. Then he sort of got a couple of gifts from that Giants defense, whether it was the long catch and run touchdown for Blake Jarwin or the long touchdown at the end where I don't know, the entire Giants secondary just sort of vacated the entire middle of the field. But this is one, Vikings are really good at linebacker. Eric Kendricks has been an all-pro this year. He's going to cause some problems in the middle of the field here for Dak. And, we'll see. We'll see if Amari Cooper can consistently separate if he's getting a lot of Xavier Rhodes on Sunday night. But this is a good one, and it's a good litmus test at home for Dak Prescott. Rams and Steelers. I don't know if the Steelers' defense is this good or they're just scooping up turnovers against bad quarterbacks, whether it be Ryan Fitzpatrick or Brian Hoyer last week. However, I do wonder if this pass rush, and not just the edge guys, Watt and Dupree, but especially Cam Hayward working against these Rams interior linemen who are just really bad. And if the Steelers get that overwhelming pass rush in this matchup, do they essentially keep the Rams offense from properly functioning, which we've seen be the case with the Rams a couple of times this season? I think this might be the one, this might be a game where the Steelers just keep it ugly enough to hang around, and then if you get a bounce, you end up stealing a win from a team that really is more talented than you. Ravens-Bengals, Ryan Finley gets his first career start for the Bengals. I'm not usually a fan of the see-what-you-have approach with young quarterbacks, but Finley did have a Blutarski-like six-year college football career. The Bengals are going to be in position to take quarterback next spring, so they should be doing all they can to get a full assessment on Finley. That said, God bless that young man playing behind the Bengals' front five. Packers and Panthers. I'd love to see a bounce back from the Packers' offensive line 1 week after they had one of the worst performances of the Aaron Rodgers era in that decisive loss to the Chargers. Obviously, the Panthers, without Kawan Short, don't have an overwhelming pass rush. They don't have the kind of individual pass rush talent that the Chargers have in Bosa and Melvin Ingram. But you wonder if it's time to start worrying about the Packers' offensive line if they can't get right in the second half of the season here. Lions and Bears, I'm not sure either team is going to get back into it, but certainly a loss here would bury either one of these teams. Detroit's deep passing game has been outstanding all season. Number one, because of Matthew Stafford, who has had an MVP caliber season, even though he will be excluded from the MVP conversation because of his team's record. But it's also been that high-priced offensive line. They're still underachieving in the run game, but they are actually performing quite well in pass protection. The Bears absolutely humiliated the Lions up front twice last season. This is going to be a good test to see where the Lions are offensively with that line, especially against a Bears defense that is still without Akeem Hicks. And, you know, Lions have a chance to actually put up some points in Soldier Field for once, and I don't know how often we've thought that over the years. Bills and Browns, you know, this is another tough test for Baker Mayfield, who just, he isn't seeing the field well, and that was kind of the takeaway, you know, when you saw Odell Beckham Jr. on the sideline complaining how he didn't get the ball when he was wide open on one of those final plays in the Denver loss last week. Baker Mayfield is just not seeing the field. And look, Sean McDermott's defense is one that makes things especially blurry for an opposing quarterback. Baker has a chance to get right this year. I think by the end of the year, we might feel pretty good about him again, but I don't know if this is the week where it's going to start to turn around for Cleveland. Falcons and Saints, I'm not sure the Falcons defense is going to come close to stopping Drew Brees and the New Orleans offense on Sunday, but the other side of the ball should be interesting if indeed Matt Ryan is back in the lineup. The Saints had issues matching up with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley last year. Ridley torched them to the point where they actually moved Marshawn Lattimore off of Jones and onto Ridley at one point. We'll see how that matchup works this year. No Mohamed Sanu, you know, that's one less weapon in the Falcons passing game, but dealing with those two guys on the outside is going to present something of a challenge for a Saints defense that has obviously been probably one of the two or three best in the league this season. Chiefs and Titans. Derrick Henry might not bother the Chiefs linebacking core as much as some of these more versatile backs would, so you kind of wonder if Deion Lewis has an expanded role against a group of Chiefs linebackers that just has been terrible in space all season. You know, Lewis might create some pretty easy opportunities for Ryan Tannehill in this one. And then obviously, I don't know at this moment if Patrick Mahomes will play in this game or not. Cardinals-Bucks, the Cardinals are going to, you would figure, throw a whole lot of those deep crossers and over routes at the Bucks 1 week after watching Tampa's secondary just get absolutely humiliated by them in Seattle. This has a chance to be a big game for Kyler Murray. He's on the road. It's a Bucks team that they're not wholly untalented on defense. They're just, it feels like they're never going to be good on the back end. It feels like they haven't been good on the back end since like John Lynch and Rondae Barber were back there or something. Dolphins and Colts. Brissett, you would assume, will not go in this one with the MCL sprain. I will say that the Colts have had some letdown games at home this year. They got beat by the Raiders. They had to pull one out last minute against the Broncos, but those games have been more a problem with the offense than the defense. I'm not sure with a shorthanded receiving core if Ryan Fitzpatrick can really get anything going in Indianapolis. So if it is indeed Brian Hoyer, which I expect it will be for the Colts, you figure this is one where he only has to put up maybe 17, 20 points to get a win for Indianapolis here. And we'll wrap it up with, the Giants and the Jets. This is going to be something to behold. This is one where you'd like to see Daniel Jones feast a little bit on a defense that is terrible at cornerback and terrible at linebacker right now. A bit of a ditto for Sam Darnold. The Giants have certainly had plenty of problems with pass defense and with yielding the big play this year. That said, Darnold just looks completely shell-shocked right now, and you just wonder what you're gonna get with him. I don't know, between the two teams, you hope maybe they end up producing a highlight beyond a feral cat running across the field. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. The MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.